Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. It all started with a stump speech last week. The audience, American Legion Post 550 in Bloomington, Minnesota. Norm Coleman, the Republican Senate candidate there, decides it's time to play the Iraq card.
Congress is faced with a big decision. And now is not the time to be passive, isolationist, or apologetic. Now is not the time to think demilitarization, or protests, or demonstrations, or dissent for the sake of dissent. It's the obligation of anyone running for public office to state unambiguously where he or she stands on an issue of this magnitude.
Well, Coleman's opponent, Democratic incumbent Paul Wellstone, is among the most liberal members of the Senate. He has a peacenik past. Later that same day, Wellstone said he won't have his hand forced, that he wants to see the language of any resolution before he speaks on the prospects of war.
I don't think people in Minnesota or people in the country want this to be made bandied about in a campaign right now. I think what they're saying to me is, look, in the next week or two, you have to make a very important decision with life or death consequences. Please do your very best to make what you think is the most honest decision that is best for Minnesota and our country and the world we live in, and that's what I'll do.
But at the very moment as debates over Iraq are beginning on Capitol Hill, Minnesota's Republican Party is pushing Senator Wellstone in TV ads just like this one.
Year in and year out, he voted for cuts. The B-2 used in Afghanistan. Anti-terrorism funding. Tanks. Planes. And those fighting for us? Wellstone actually voted against pay raises for our soldiers 13 times and against health benefits for our veterans. If he's not fighting for them, ask Wellstone, who are you fighting for?
Connection listeners, this hour we're discussing Iraq and the upcoming elections. Control of the Senate is a big question mark here, and it's not just about Minnesota. This is a national matter as well. The question, do you think Iraq is the issue in this election? Will your vote depend on your candidate's vote? Join us at 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. You can, of course, join us online at theconnection.org. Now, we'll talk with several political experts this hour. We're going to go first to Chris Gilbert. He's chair of the Political Science Department at Gustavus Adolphus College in St. Peter, Minnesota. Welcome to the program, Chris.
Good morning, Dick. Good to be with you.
I gather the Republicans dragged out every issue imaginable prior to Iraq. They talked about gun control and Social Security and health insurance and the economy, and Iraq was, in a way, the last gun.
Yes, in many respects, this has been a race with very few issues that either side has been able to use as a wedge to alter the status quo. And the status quo since February has been a statistical dead heat with very few people undecided, only 10% undecided back in February, only 5% in a mid-September poll. Wellstone running slightly ahead of Coleman, though clearly within the margin of error. So both sides, I think, have been doing two things for 8 months now. One is, of course, to reinforce the idea among people who already had a preference that they made the right choice. And the other is to appeal to a relatively small group of folks who have been sitting on the fence. And Iraq seems to be perhaps a better option for Mr. Coleman and the Republicans than any previous issue that they've raised. And given the spending in this campaign, which by Minnesota standards has been extraordinarily high, over $15 million spent so far, this is the big gun. And it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Chris, I don't understand why someone with Wellstone's past and commitment and history on this issue wouldn't just kick right back the way Ted Kennedy's been speaking, the way Al Gore's been speaking out on the issue.
Well, Paul Wellstone today, I think, is a little bit different, Dick, than the Paul Wellstone of 10 or even 5 years ago. He has become more statesmanlike in how he approaches issues. And I think that Wellstone truly believes that it's premature to make a final statement about what he would do regarding the Iraq situation until he does see the language of the resolution. And I think that Wellstone may well vote for a resolution that has a more limited grant of authority to President Bush, something more like what Joseph Biden and Richard Lugar are putting forward. But I think he's become more cautious in general about stating what he's going to do until he sees what's in front of him. I would not be surprised if he votes no on any resolution that comes forward. But I think this does fit with how he's changed a little bit in the last few years in terms of how he works inside the Senate.
Okay, so we've got all the domestic issues that were put on the table by both candidates. We now have Iraq being talked about in the campaign in Minnesota. Tell me how you see it playing, whether or not people are focusing in on the Iraq side, whether or not they're more interested in the domestic issues. I mean, I ask in part because I saw the editorial in the Star Tribune saying, delay the war vote until after the election. We want to get the local issues on the table. What are people saying, though, Chris?
Well, it seems to me that people are quite concerned about the Iraq issue. I was at the doctor's office on Monday, and the nurse and the doctor in the midst of the exam kept asking me questions about Iraq. That's become quite common, but it's also clear to me that Iraq is not the only thing on the minds of Minnesota voters, that they're concerned about a stagnant economy. Our state faces a $3 billion budget shortfall. That is, I'm afraid, typical for many states these days. There's a lot of things closer to home that concern people and that seem more pressing in many respects than Iraq. The rush to judgment, I think, has concerned Minnesotans a little bit more maybe than it's concerned people elsewhere in the country, though I know that's been talked about. So Iraq is going to be important, and there's no question that conscientious voters need to know and should know where the candidates stand on the issue. But any attempt to turn this race into a one-issue race, I think, is bound to fail because Minnesota voters seem to have a much broader palette that they're interested in pursuing. And Wellstone and Coleman, especially if Coleman can force Wellstone away from that broader set of issues, that really will alter the dynamic of the race. And I'm not sure voters are going to treat Mr. Coleman kindly for it, even if they perhaps agree with him a little bit more than they agree with Wellstone, which I think is a little bit unclear as to where the voters stand in our state.
Okay, Chris, stay with us if you can.
Sure.
Connection listeners, we're going to widen this out a little bit and talk about it in a national context. Worth noting that the wire services are now carrying news copy out of Washington on an agreement between the House and the White House on what the language of a resolution might look like. No agreement with the Senate yet, but to quote from a portion of that, that the Bush would be authorized to use the armed forces of the United States as he determines necessary and appropriate in order to, one, defend the national security interests of the United States against the continuing threat posed by Iraq, and two, to enforce all relevant United Nations Security Council resolutions regarding Iraq. That's the conversation that's underway as we speak now at the national level in Washington. And to get a sense of what's happening around the country, we're bringing the Republican pollster Whit Ayers into the conversation. He joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Whit.
Hello, Dick. How are you?
Fine, thanks. And David King is in the studio with me. He's a professor of public policy at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. David, thanks for coming in.
Good morning. Thank you.
Are you expecting, David, to see more and more references to Iraq as candidates now start to look at the specific language in a resolution? Do you see that as a turning point?
Over the next week, there's going to be a lot of talk about Iraq. It depends partly on what happens with the Senate. The House is going to clear this fairly quickly. The Democrats are not planning on waiting until after the elections. They want to get this issue cleared off the table as quickly as possible, see how the markets react, and then play the economy game. Look like patriots and talk about pocketbook issues. So expect this to clear very quickly.
Okay, I want to come back to a couple of issues you've raised there, but I do want to hear from Whit in terms of Whit, how you're seeing this. You're, in fact, working this campaign with a couple of Republican candidates, one in Tennessee, one in South Carolina. Am I right?
That's correct, on the Senate side, as well as gubernatorial candidates and some other congressional candidates.
What are you telling them, Whit?
This election environment is dominated by two mega issues, national security and economic insecurity. It's been that way for the last year. It might be helpful to think back 13 months ago when the economy was going in the tank and all the talk was about health care and the economy. It was a situation ripe for Democratic gains. And then our whole world changed on September the 11th, and national security became a dominant issue. That didn't shift the playing field to the Republicans, but it leveled the playing field to the point where you have lots of campaigns around the country that are basically dead heat, similar to the one you've got there in Minnesota. So it really has helped the Republicans to have national security on the table with economic insecurity. And I still think it's too early to tell what's going to dominate the last week or 10 days of this campaign.
you're saying it could tip towards the economy or towards national security.
Exactly. And it's very important which way it tips. If you rank issues from those where Republicans are trusted most to those where the Democrats are trusted most, national security and military affairs defines the Republican end of the spectrum, just like the environment defines the Democratic end of the spectrum. Flip it around the other way. Imagine a major environmental disaster where all the talk was about what we're going to do to protect the environment. That kind of debate would help Democrats just by virtue of discussing the environment. Similarly, discussing national security and military affairs helps the Republicans because they're trusted more than Democrats on that issue.
Chris Gilbert in Minnesota, do you see this race as now becoming the one that we were talking about earlier, simply about Iraq because that was put on the table? Or can you see either or both Republican and Democratic candidate moving past it?
Well, I don't think it's ever going to just be about Iraq, in part because there are too many other issues, and I do believe we're going to move past it in the several debates that will be coming up between Coleman and Wellstone as we move forward. But secondly, I think it's important to remember that voters will think about candidates' stands on Iraq not in isolation, but in the context of everything else that they know about candidates. In the case of Coleman and Wellstone, almost unique perhaps compared to some of these other races, people have a long history here. They know these two people. They know a lot about what they stand for and what they've done. So Iraq can never be completely separated out from the totality of the record that they've been attacking of the other person and the record that they're running on in a positive sense themselves.
David, what do you think?
Well, I think that's exactly right. Iraq is going to be part of it, but it's not going to be the dominant issue if the House and the Senate come to agreement with the White House in the next few weeks. We're 34 days out from the election. The critical time in this election is going to be the last 2 weeks when the independent and swing voters are going to be making up their mind. So many of these races are in dead heats, and how those last 2 weeks play out will be critical. I think there will be a swing one way or the other. We won't have a knife-edge result and nearly a tie coming out in the House and the Senate. I think it's going to go several seats to the Democrats or several seats to the Republicans.
You were saying a couple of minutes ago that the Democrats' ideal circumstance would be to have the vote, move it off the table, concentrate on the economy. But if you have the vote, can you really move it off the table while it remains the focus of international debate at the United Nations and while Bush continues and his team continue to push it as hard as they have?
Yes, you can, because then you have the Congress behind the president and the country looking united on that issue. I don't think that a lot of candidates will harp on votes that had been taken. I think they can wrap themselves in the flag at that moment and try and move together as a unit and say, you're making this into a political issue. The economy will be a political issue. The poll, ABC News poll of 2 days ago, had the economy the most important issue at 51% and the war on terrorism in Iraq at 47%.
So, statistically, that's pretty close to a dead heat, though, isn't it?
Neck and neck, yes.
All right. Connection listeners, our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We'd be interested in having you join our conversation about the place of Iraq in the debate. Chris Gilbert, I'll take this opportunity to thank you for being with us.
Good to be with you. Thanks.
Chris Gilbert is chair of the Political Science Department at Gustavus Adolphus College in Minnesota, certainly one of the Senate races that will be one of the ones to watch leading up to the 5th of November. But the issue before us this hour is, even as politicians in Washington are taking a look at the language of proposed resolutions, will this issue have staying power? Are we going to hear more of it or less of it as the campaign draws into its final weeks? 1-800-423-TALK is the number to join the program. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. Listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. There's been a lot of hesitation about the specific references to the war in Iraq in the election campaign that we're now close to counting as being in the last month of. And we're interested in knowing from your perspective whether or not you think it needs to be a bigger part of the campaign, a bigger part of the issue, whether or not it will be either at the local level, person you're voting for or at the national level. 1-800-423-8255. David King's in the studio with me. He's a professor of public policy at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. And Whit Ayers is a GOP pollster joining us on the line from Atlanta. Whit, first to you, are you getting direction as a Republican from the White House on what candidates ought to be saying or ought not to be saying?
Oh, no, the White House doesn't work that way, at least with us. But what I am hearing from focus groups is a lot of concern and a lot of talk about Iraq. The prospect of going to war, of sending Americans into harm's way, focuses the mind. That doesn't mean that all people are going to vote based upon that concern. I think it's likely to be a very important concern where someone actually votes against the resolution, as Paul Wellstone might. But it's more a broader concern about the whole environment that I'm hearing more and more these days.
And David, is it your sense that if there's hesitation on the Democratic side, the hesitation comes because people don't want to find themselves in that uncomfortable type of confrontation that Daschle and Bush went through last week, where they were, you know, trading accusations of which party was more behind national security?
Well, I think that the language coming out of the House this morning, which, by the way, was announced and trumpeted by Gephardt, not by Hastert, I think that it's the kind of language that many senators will be able to get behind. I don't think that there's going to be a great deal of difficulty over the next few days crafting some kind of a language that even a Paul Wellstone will be able to sign off on.
All right, let's go to our callers, to Indianapolis, and Edward's on the line. Hi, Edward.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm like this. If we really want to go with war with Iraq, what we need to do is send the CIA into Iraq, take over one of those batteries, those missile batteries they have in the no-fly zones, shoot down one of our own planes, claim it was Iraq, and we've got a war on our hands. It's like we could actually remote control one of those planes actually from a distant location, just like they do the dummy planes in Afghanistan.
What are you saying, Edward, that this is not really something that's going to play out politically, that this is going to be done with some military sleight of hand?
I'm saying this. If we want to take this guy out, we've got to play by rules that are not actually on the board. Actually, the CIA could do it tomorrow if they wanted to. Shoot down one of our planes, we've got a war.
They don't have to actually do that. They just have to listen to the White House spokesman, Ari Fleischer, who said, one bullet, a coup wouldn't hurt. Maybe we could look at that. Thanks for your call, Edward. 1-800-423-8255. Elisa on the road in North Carolina?
From Durham. I'm almost at work right now.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for having this program. I have to tell you that to me, Iraq is one of the most defining issues, and I will definitely remember what my representative will be voting. I actually recently met with him just a few days ago. My representative is Representative David Price. And if he does vote for the war resolution, then I will campaign against his reelection. And there are numerous petitions being circulated nationwide to make our statement really clear that we will keep our eye out for the representatives that allow the use of military vengeance against a defenseless population like Iraq and kill thousands of people in the process, and we will not vote for them ever again. And we're a growing movement. So to me, Iraq is definitely a dividing issue. I don't view it, though, as a contradictory issue with the economy. I view them as one and the same issue.
Whit Ayers, you taking notes there?
I just hope that there are lots of folks out there that will help define this election along the lines that caller just defined. I think that would be wonderful for Republicans if it were defined that way.
Because it would play so well to support for Republicans?
Her view is a very small minority in this country, and if Democrats are defined as the party that is against protecting the country against dictators like Saddam Hussein, it's wonderful for Republicans. I don't think we're going to get that lucky, though.
Elisa, it sounds like you're playing into the opposition hands here.
Well, actually, what I'm asking is for the Democratic Party to finally be true to the Democratic nature, which is to pay attention to to labor issues, to pay attention to environmental issues, and to pay attention to security. I believe quite strongly, and I am not alone in this, but I'm supported by literally tens of thousands here in North Carolina, that going to war against Iraq is a threat to our national security. It is a threat to international cooperation. And most definitely, it is a threat to our morality. And I would like to see the issue of morality actually being discussed in politics and not being regarded as a diversion or a digression. It should be one of the most important issues in the campaigns, but it is being disregarded.
Elisa,
so I have to take disregard here. I don't view that, you know, I am asking the Republicans to win, or I view that the Democrats are not being true to national security. Quite the contrary. A vote for this war is a vote in opposition to national security. And opposition.
Okay, Elisa, let me see if I can get David King in on this, because she seems to be further to the left from where the Democratic leadership is certainly placing itself on this one.
On almost any issue, there's certainly a distribution of points of view, but a candidate, in order to win, has to get, you know, the most votes. And in that case, with current public opinion, certainly in David Price's district and in much of the country, it would be to engage Iraq in some way that allows Congress to control and oversee what the White House is doing. And the real question is not whether we're going to engage Iraq, but how closely we'll be allied with the United Nations forces and resolutions while that happens.
Bush is at 67%, David. Do you interpret that figure as 67% of that 67% saying we're also on board with the president's position against Iraq as well? Is that a straight comparison?
No, not really. It's at a time of great conflict like this, presidential support will be high regardless. There's not a lot you can interpret from that.
Okay. 1-800-423-8255 to Raleigh, North Carolina. John's joining us. Hi, John.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to let you know I'm about 30 minutes away from Elisa. I'm over in Raleigh. And we must be a different breed over here, because she does not represent my views in the absolute least. I agree with her that the issue of Iraq is important. It's important to me. It's important to the people that I work with, my family and friends, anyone that I speak with about it. We all would like to know where our representatives stand on the issue of Iraq. I don't think that it's unreasonable for us, the voting public, and I'm just a common guy who would like to know where our representatives stand on the issue.
But when you say you want to know how representatives stand, you're looking for those representatives to stand with the president on this issue, right?
That's my personal feeling on it. I think that Saddam Hussein and his regime in Iraq is a real and present threat, has been, but particularly now with the realization that he may be on the cusp of nuclear weapons, and certainly I don't think anyone in their right mind doubts that he has ever stopped manufacturing weapons of mass destruction, biological, chemical weapons. I mean, anyone who you know, truly believes that he has stopped that is absolutely fooling themselves. And Elisa probably is completely fooling
herself. John, let me just ask Whit to join us on this. Whit, John's Senate race, I think Erskine Bowles and Libby Dole, is that
right.
One where this is being in any way discussed?
It's hard to imagine Erskine Bowles taking Alicia's position on this. It would be nice if he would, but I can't imagine that he would get that far to the left of most of his North Carolina constituents.
So it doesn't become an issue. Is that right then, Whit?
It's an issue in two separate ways. The first is if the Democrat really does vote against the resolution, and Paul Wellstone is a candidate to vote against it.
Right.
In most cases, though, it doesn't become a direct difference of opinion. It's more the backdrop, the texture against which the campaign is run. Referring back to my earlier point, where Republicans tend to be trusted more on matters of military security and national security, when in doubt, that helps Republican candidates, but it's not a defining issue unless the Democrat votes against the resolution that the president has requested.
Then just quickly to John, if Bowles votes for the resolution, I'm sorry, if Bowles supports the resolution, if Dole supports the resolution, do you say, great, now let's talk about jobs here in North Carolina?
Yes, I think that that would be an accurate statement. I will say that the campaign that is currently going on between Bowles and Dole, the television ads anyway, and the ads that I hear on the news radio are not mentioning Iraq at all. It is all more or less domestic issues, Social Security, minimum wage, all, you know, stuff like that. There's a real dichotomy between the two on where they stand.
Thanks for your call, John. It was nice to have you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
David King, take us somewhere else. Take us to New Hampshire. Talk to us about the way, for example, that it's expected to play in a state where there is no incumbent, but what's thought to be a pretty tough race there.
Well, when you talk about New Hampshire, you're talking about possible control of the Senate. The Republicans are down just one seat. They need to pick up one. They're probably going to pick up New Jersey. The Democrats may well pick up Arkansas with Mark Pryor taking his father's seat back. So you have a few races, such as the Wellstone race and the New Hampshire race and the South Dakota race, that are absolutely pivotal. And the New Hampshire race is quite interesting. You have Representative John Sununu, who defeated Senator Bob Smith in the primaries, defeated him handily, and Governor Gene Shaheen, who's remarkably popular and has a very well-run organization in New Hampshire. Sununu has to worry quite a bit about a resurgent Bob Smith, who's now saying he's going to run a write-in campaign. And Iraq has become an issue. It's not the dominant issue. John Sununu is claiming that Gene Shaheen isn't strong enough on military affairs, but he's not using the word Iraq. Still, as always seems to be the case in New Hampshire, it's the economy, it's taxes, and it's for trying to get someone else to pay for the schools.
It airs. The idea of a write-in for Bob Smith must make you guys crazy.
Well, Senator Smith managed to get all of about 2% of the vote in a Republican primary in his home state when he ran for president. So he's not exactly a potent political force there. But I do think David's right. There are a number of fascinating races around the country. Missouri's another one, with the widow of former Governor Carnahan, who was appointed to the seat, and Jim Talent running a very strong campaign there. It's definitely one worth watching. Tennessee, Lamar Alexander is doing very well for Fred Thompson's seat. Lindsey Graham's doing very well in South Carolina for Strom Thurmond's seat. So the control of the Senate could hinge on any of a dozen Senate races right now that are within the margin of error.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. To Virginia Beach now, and Amanda's calling in. Hi, Amanda.
Hi there. I just wanted to add some comments, stepping away from who I'll vote for or won't vote for, more in general, that I'm just offended by the rhetoric that if you're against the war, you're against the U.S. I think that's really simplifying it. And it's inevitable that, you know, in election year this would be used. But these issues are far more complex than that. And I have no doubt that Saddam Hussein has a bunch of nasties over there. And I think there are ways to deal with this without being so, you know, pound the drums of war right now, particularly in light of the fact that, you know, we are not viewed very kindly in the Middle East to begin with. And what is this going to do for the next generation of terrorists that get spawned out of that?
Isn't, Amanda, the simplification, though, part of the brilliance of well-run politics, that if someone is able to distill something down to, you know, the slogan that would fit on a license plate, that they can make that work for them? Go ahead.
I think that's true in terms of how politics have become in the United States, but I don't think that's the idea of Jeffersonian democracy, where I'm personally, as a citizen, am concerned that I can't speak out and say, whoa, we shouldn't go to war yet. I mean, I come from a military family. My husband's in the Army Reserves. And, you know, soldiers came back from the Gulf War with Gulf War syndrome. So we send soldiers in now. How do we know that? I mean, I think he's more likely to be Saddam Hussein, willing to use some of his weapons now than he would before. But here we're going to just throw people over there willy-nilly. And I feel there's some more political, not political, but more financial reasons behind wanting to gain control of oil in Iraq. And
let's just stick with the first part if we can, Amanda, because
I'm sorry.
I want to ask David whether or not you see this in any way as a failure of the Democratic leadership to clear the ground for someone like Amanda to feel comfortable with an anti-war position without people accusing her of not being patriotic.
Well, I think she has reason to be worried about not being a Jeffersonian democracy. But the current rules on how something's going to get through the Senate, I think, will water down the resolution from the House. The political reality is that people are upset about Iraq. They're upset about, and they have great concerns, obviously, for good reasons, about the war on terrorism. And they want to see Congress and the presidency united on this. The Democratic leadership in the Senate knows that they need to get a resolution in through quickly. And they have to be able to do that with a 60 votes in the Senate, because anyone could filibuster. Yes, they have to have a cloture-proof majority behind this resolution. To get that 60th vote, the House resolution will be watered down, and I don't think it'll look nearly as bellicose as many people this morning are assuming.
Whit Ayers, just on the very frustrating point for Amanda that she feels like opposition to the current war strategy is being interpreted as anti-patriotic. Is that something that the Republicans have achieved?
Oh, I don't think so, and I don't think they've tried to achieve it. The point she raises is a very valid concern. If you just listen to people out there, there are all kinds of concerns about the prospect of military engagement with Iraq and what it will mean for the country and what it will mean for the people fighting the war. There are a lot of legitimate concerns out there. And I think if you listen to what the president has said ever since he started raising this issue back at the start of the year, he has not oversimplified it. He's talked about how it's going to be a long war and a difficult war. And there are a lot of legitimate concerns. But the fact that there are legitimate concerns should not lead us to inaction. And I think that's what the debate is about right now in Washington, is how to go about doing this in the most thoughtful and intelligent and efficient way.
All right, Amanda, thank you very much for your call.
Thank you.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255, and we'll invite you to join us as we continue our conversation about the place of an attack on Iraq in the last month of the midterm election campaign, which is roughly where we find ourselves today. 1-800-423-8255. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. Our number, 1-800-423-TALK. Join us for our conversation about the use and the abuse, the reference to or the references not to the word Iraq in the election campaign that's underway right now. 1-800-423-TALK. With us on the line from Atlanta, Georgia, Whit Ayers, Republican pollster, currently running polls for two Senate candidates, Lamar Alexander in Tennessee, Lindsey Graham in South Carolina, as well as doing work on the House side. David King's in the studio with me. He's a professor of public policy at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. He's also chair of the Harvard Program for Newly Elected Members of Congress. It's a conference teaching members about public policy issues. So if you think your member got it wrong, you can actually blame David for that. And we're going out to Duluth, Minnesota. Jan's on the line. Hi, Jan.
Good morning, Mr. Gordon. Thanks for taking my call. I have been a supporter of Paul Wellstone since before anybody knew who he was, when they were sure he couldn't win. And war with Iraq is not negotiable. I'm sorry. If he votes for this, I will take his sign off my lawn. I feel too strongly that our sons, our grandsons are going to come back in body bags, and it's blood for oil.
Will you vote in the election, Jen?
I'll vote green.
That's your alternative, right?
Yep, I will vote, and I know that my vote may help Norm Coleman to get in, and I don't like him. And I know it can tip the Senate, and I know all the repercussions, the Supreme Court and all of that. I just feel so strongly that this is a contrived war made up by Bush, and Paul needs to stick up for what he's always believed in and stood for.
Lisa was saying earlier on the program that there are petitions going around and people who are sharing her point of view. Do you feel like there's any kind of a larger message here for Wellstone, or are you a voice in the wilderness here?
No, and, you know, there have been a lot of peace things going on, and we're not getting any airtime. The paper doesn't show up. There are lots of speakers. People are emailing Wellstone.
Right.
I'm not sure how I'm a grandmother for peace, and I'm not sure how concerted the effort is, but I know that there are many people who feel like I do. But like Alicia, or maybe it was the other lady, we're afraid of being called non-patriotic. It doesn't have anything to do with patriotism.
All right. Jan, let me ask David about the Nader effect of this type of message that Jan has for her representatives.
Well, she's taking a very moral stand, and she also knows that the consequence may be to throw the election in Norm Coleman. That was the effect of the Green Party activism nationwide in 2000, and it could certainly happen in Minnesota as well. Paul Wellstone is very much trying to change his image and get the focus off of Iraq right now. Earlier this week, he was the sponsor of an amendment to extend unemployment benefits for another 13 weeks, and Republicans killed it on the floor of the Senate. So the kind of calculus that Paul Wellstone is going through right now is trying to figure out how the language can be watered down for it to be acceptable enough for him. Trying to figure out if he loses your vote, will he pick up two of the folks who would have been voting for Norm Coleman? It's a very difficult place for him to be.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Jan. 1-800-423-8255 to Sumter, South Carolina now, and CD is on the line. Hi, CD.
Hi. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Well, back in the 2000 election, I did vote Republican, and traditionally I have voted Republican. My family's always voted that way. And most of my friends have voted that way. And I wonder now if I'm alone in feeling that the Republicans have, to some extent, kind of violated our trust.
In what way?
Well, I felt like this very shortly after September 11th, that George Bush at first, and then on more of a local level, that a lot of the politicians were really using it to push along their agendas. And I think George Bush deviated from very early on. He deviated from just that very strict Homeland Security policy and used the tag of Homeland Security to push along, you know, outside issues that were, you know, part of his initial agenda.
Okay, CD, Whit Ayers is a Republican pollster. Let me ask Whit whether or not that's part of the dilemma that the Republican Party faces, and that is the risk of talking about Iraq, the risk of talking about national security, homeland security, and being seen to take political advantage of it.
We look to our political leaders for leadership, which sometimes means taking us places that we don't think we want to go right now. If the president and his team truly have evidence of a threat in Iraq, they would be irresponsible not to do it. There will always be accusations of political calculations and political motivations behind anything. But normally the aggregate voters will see clearly, I think, through false motivations or cynical motivations to what's good for the country. And if a president truly is doing what he believes is good for the country, I think you just accept those cynical assumptions and move on because it's your job to move on. And I think most people will move with him.
All right. CD, thanks for that call. 1-800-423-8255 to Norfolk, Virginia. And Sonia is joining us. Hello, Sonia.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, hear you fine.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Fine,
I live in Norfolk, Virginia, which is, I guess everybody knows, has a huge military contingency here. And I just think that, this is such a huge issue. I mean, the ramifications are incredibly large, but yet Saddam Hussein is in clear violation of these UN resolutions, and to penalize a congressman for thinking thoughtfully about the issues and voting one way or the other. I mean, I don't believe anybody's going to do this very lightly and to say that they're not patriotic enough or they're too patriotic. That's not going to be one of the bases for which I vote, because, like I said, I think it's a huge, huge issue. I don't think that anybody's going to take this lightly. I mean, there are other more telling indicators on which I'm going to vote, the environment, the economy. And I really think this should be taken out of the political side because, like I said, it's a big deal.
David.
Well, it is a big deal, and you're right that the members are thinking very hard about it. A member in a 2-year time will cast about 6,000 votes. Some of them are not recorded, but about 6,000 votes will be cast. And most of the time, the member will be watching how his or her colleagues are voting. If you ask somebody how they voted on important issues, a member may be able to recall, after 2 years, only 5, 6, or 7 votes. This vote is going to be one that they'll remember forever, and they'll labor hard and long on this decision. It's not simply a political calculus. It's also a moral question.
All right, Sonia, thanks very much for your call. To Davenport, Iowa, and Dennis is on the line. Dennis, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. I have grave concerns about the war and the potential of war, and grave concerns about what has happened to our political process and the opportunity to have a rational debate over this as a result of the events of September 11th.
How do you see it playing out in politics, though, Dennis?
Well, unfortunately, again, we're not allowed to have a rational debate as the people inside the Beltway and the people in New York City have a great deal of anger and fear relative to what happened for obvious reasons.
But I'm hearing from Jan and Elisa that they don't have any hesitation of taking up a principled stand that supports their particular view.
Well, that's understandable, and I have grave misgivings about the war. Normally, we would have a rational debate over the war, but right now, our leadership and the leadership in Washington and the media in New York, again, I think are in shock over the events of September 11th, and it's preventing them from really engaging in a rational debate over what we head into.
All right, Dennis, let me just take the point that you're making about the rational debate, because in effect that's exactly where we're headed right now. We've been talking in hypothetical terms about whatever the wording of a resolution might be. It airs within a matter of days. The politicians who are in Washington will be looking at the text of a resolution. They will be debating it. Are you expecting that will be a debate that will hear some of the concerns that you're hearing expressed on the program?
Of course. I think that's exactly what we're about ready to see in the Senate, is hours upon hours upon hours of debate. One hopes it will be largely rational, but I think exactly what Dennis is hoping for is about what we're ready to see.
And David, do you think that a Democratic member of the House or senator is going to stand up in his or her place and feel in any way constrained that if they've got the sort of reservations, the grave concerns that Dennis is talking about, that they're going to have to find a politically more palatable way to raise that issue? Or can you see the debate actually widening to a point where, strongly held positions are expressed as strongly held positions?
Debate in the House is fairly constrained. It's usually limited to 2 hours for each side. They may actually give this 6 hours, but it'll be a day, most likely, of full-throated debate. In the Senate side, you could be looking at a week of full-throated debate, because in order to get this resolution to the floor, you have to have unanimous consent, which means that every member of the Senate has to agree on the terms and the length of debate. Only a third of the Senate is up for election this year. Actually, 34 seats mm-hmm. out of 100 are up for re-election. And you have then a majority who are not standing for re-election immediately, and they will be absolutely out there to engage in this debate. It will be like the Gulf War debate of a decade ago.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Whit Ayres, the Gulf debate of a year ago is it? I'm sorry, of 1991 that David's talking about is one that is marked on every politician's record who was there. You can either run for president or not, depending on how you voted in 91. Do you think this one is going to have the same long-term implications? Do you think the politicians are looking at it that way as well?
Oh, I agree completely with David. I think this is one vote that people will remember. I was a part of a 1992 campaign for Paul Coverdale, who was running against Weitch Fowler for the U.S. Senate from Georgia. Weitch Fowler had voted against the Gulf War resolution, and it was one of a few points that we used to make the case that Weitch Fowler was out of step with most Georgia voters. So,
and it worked.
It worked. There's no question it worked. So David's exactly right. This will be one vote that people will remember for many years and may affect political careers.
David, Al Gore can and did run for president because he voted in favor of the Persian Gulf Resolution January 1991. Do you think that people on the Democratic side will view it exactly the same, with this vote exactly the same way, in terms of not just what does it mean for the election, but what's it going to mean for my political career, however long it lasts?
Well, for those who are imagining having a national stage, they do have to have that vote in mind. Al Gore was able to launch his salvo a few weeks ago because he's inoculated on this issue because of how he voted 10 years ago, 11 years ago. I don't think you'll see Jonathan Edwards voting against this. I don't think you're going to see Senator Lieberman voting against this because they have national aspirations. It'll be interesting to see here in Massachusetts how John Kerry plays this. I don't know how he's going to play this, but most senators don't have national aspirations. We can count on a hand and a half how many do. And they're going to be particularly nervous over the next week or so.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
It was nice to have you on the program. David King is a professor of public policy at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Whit Ayers, thanks for your time.
It's a pleasure, Dick. Enjoyed being with you.
All right. Whit is a Republican pollster in Atlanta, Georgia. A little earlier in the program, we talked with Chris Gilbert, chair of the Political Science Department at Gustavus Adolphus College in Minnesota. Connection listeners, you know you can find us at our website, theconnection.org, to continue the conversation in on our forums page. Special thanks to Mark Sedeklik at Minnesota Public Radio for helping us with the audio tape that we used at the beginning of the program. Our program is produced by Sean Carberry, Sarah Field, Orit Karitsky-Fox, Allison McAdam, Lindsay Miller, Tara Murphy, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugarts. Our interns are Carter Holleran and Meredith Levinson. Our senior producer is Graham Smith. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be.